This hour's top story, Saudi Arabia conducts fresh airstrikes on Yemen targeting the international airport in the capital Sana'a. Thousands of protesters rally in Istanbul after Turkey withdrew from a treaty to prevent and combat violence against women. And people rally in the U.S. city of Atlanta in support of the Asian American community in the wake of deadly shootings that left six Asian women dead. Welcome to the program. Saudi Arabia has carried out fresh airstrikes on Yemen that is targeting Sana'a's international airport. Yemeni media said the airport was hit twice, but there were no immediate reports on possible damage or casualties. Saudi-led coalition warplanes have also conducted airstrikes against targets at a port in the western province of Hodeidah. Riyadh and its Arab allies launched a deadly war and blockade on Yemen in 2015. The conflict has killed tens of thousands of Yemenis, mostly civilians, and resulted in what the UN calls the world's worst humanitarian crisis. The Yemeni army has in recent weeks ramped up its retaliatory attacks on Saudi Arabia. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been facing months of protests over his corruption charges and handling of the coronavirus crisis. During our news review program, we discussed the issue with our guests.
Thousands of Israelis have held a fresh demonstration against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in Jerusalem Al-Quds. Protesters gathered outside Netanyahu's residence to condemn his policies and call for his resignation. The rally was held just days before a general election, which could see him removed from office. Netanyahu has been in power for a record 12 consecutive years. He's hoping to remain in office following Israel's fourth election in less than 2 years, this March 23rd. Netanyahu is facing corruption charges. He went on trial in May for bribery, fraud, and breach of trust, but denies any wrongdoing. Israelis have been staging street rallies against him over the past 38 weeks. And now joining us for this news review is Yves Angler, author and commentator from Montreal, and Firas Al-Najim, manager at Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, joining us out of Ottawa. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program here. Firas, I guess we'll start with you. Your thoughts on, there was a time that Benjamin Netanyahu was very popular with his own people. What's happened to him?
Well, I guess first I want to congratulate everybody for Nowruz that's celebrating. Netanyahu is a big war criminal. The man has committed many war crimes himself. Before he was elected as a prime minister, he's been an IDF soldier and he's been up in the ranks. This person is, he has no respect for any international laws. Obviously, that means he doesn't have any respect for any laws inside of his country. A person that doesn't care about any laws, and dealings with the whole world. And he called the ICC, the International Criminal Court, a kangaroo court. He has no respect for any courts, any court systems, any governments. He sent out his Mossad to assassinate people in different places in the world. I mean, like we said, like this, it's nice to see that there's actually a movement from inside that is against him. But we don't know what the results are going to be. Like, is he going to be ousted? Is he not going to regain power?
Okay, thank you. And Yves Angler, I'd like to welcome you to the program. Now, 38 weeks, that's almost a year of protesting outside his residence there. And for the majority of it, for practically all of it, it's been throughout this pandemic. So people have been, braving, risking their health to get their point across to their so-called prime minister. Your thoughts on what's irked the Palestinians, the Israelis to this point where they turned against this man?
Well, my understanding is that it's about his corruption, it's about his handling of the pandemic. It's not much about his ongoing dispossession of Palestinians, the continued occupation, Israeli bombing in Syria, Israel's assassinations in Iran, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that it is, you know, it's better that there are Israelis protesting Netanyahu than not. I think that for most of the world, for most people who, you know, care about the long oppressed Palestinians, whether it's Netanyahu or Naftali Bennett that wins the upcoming election, it's not going to change things a whole lot, unfortunately. In fact, this might be the first time that a non-Likud right-wing president wins, or prime minister, sorry, takes over in Israel, because it's the whole spectrum in Israel has gone so far to the anti-Palestinian racist kind of direction. But yeah, it's a good thing they're protesting, and I think there's some element of sympathy for Palestinians among the protesters. But unfortunately, that's not the driving force.
And Yves, do you think it's just a denunciation of Netanyahu himself by these protesters, or the greater Likud party?
Yeah, I think it's a heavily personalized element, which is understandable. I mean, he's been there for way too long. He is corrupt. He's a bad guy. But I think that unfortunately for those looking from outside, the getting rid of Netanyahu won't change things as much as need to be changed.
And do you agree with that, Firas, that Netanyahu is just, one part of the one piece of this this puzzle, that, whether it's him or Gantz or any other guy, basically, Palestinians are going to suffer apartheid and marginalized living standards?
Yes, this is systematic. They have this embedded in their system that the Palestinians have no rights. The Palestinians should be, driven out of the country. I mean, like we've seen with the deal of century, what they crafted there, it was a joke, It's a joke of the century. I mean, they want to leave them like leftovers on the side and put them in pretty much like kind of concentration camps and have no military and no strength at all. It's exactly like how Trump is and Biden. I mean, they're both, involved in all the war crimes and exploiting and plundering resources, dividing the region, and so on. And that's the agenda of the Israelis. At the end of the day, it's the Zionists, they're going to continue to do it. They just have different faces. I guess the people are just sick of this face. They want a new face, just like how people were sick of Trump. I mean, even though Trump didn't stay for 12 years, but because of the things that he did, he worked very arrogantly, very unprofessional, so that's why they got rid of him. This guy was able to stay longer inside power because he's better at deceiving and manipulating and acting. He's a good actor, I guess. And he doesn't, he doesn't just show exactly his arrogance as much as, for instance, Trump is. So, yeah, it's going to continue the same kind of war crimes, same kind of violations, I guess there is some resistance in the region that will know how to deal with the situation, hopefully.
All right, gentlemen, thank you both for joining us. And Yves Engler, author and commentator, joining us out of Montreal. And Firas Al-Najim, manager at Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, joining us out of Ottawa.
Over 500 international organizations urged the UN Human Rights Council to denounce Israel's war crimes against Palestinian people. The organizations called on the world body to establish an independent fact-finding mission into Israel's apartheid regime. They call for an investigation of the crimes the regime has committed against Palestinians, including home demolitions and illegal settlement construction in the occupied West Bank. The organizations urge the international community to use all available mechanisms to achieve international justice and accountability. They call for immediate action against Israel to hold accountable individuals who may have committed war crimes against Palestinians. Thousands of people join a demonstration in Turkey after the country withdrew from an international treaty designed to protect women. Protesters took to the streets in the cities of Istanbul, Ankara, and Izmir, calling on President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to reverse his decision. On Saturday, the government pulled out of Istanbul Convention signed in 2011. The binding treaty calls for preventing, prosecuting, and eliminating domestic violence against women. But the Turkish government says the treaty damaged family unity and encourages divorce. The withdrawal sparked international outrage, with several European countries, including France and Germany, condemning the move. Domestic violence and femicide have been on the rise in Turkey in recent years. Hundreds of people have gathered outside the Georgia state capitol in Atlanta in support of the Asian American community. The protest comes amid mounting violence against the Asian community, who are being blamed for the coronavirus crisis. The demonstrators carried posters bearing slogans denouncing discrimination against Asians. Two Georgia senators also took part in the rally earlier. U.S. President Joe Biden denounced the rise of hate crimes and violence against Asian Americans in his country. This comes after eight people, mostly Asian women, were killed in a series of attacks in Atlanta.
The United States has witnessed yet another hate crime against minority groups that sparked a nationwide debate over the threats these people are facing in the country. On Wednesday, a white man gunned down eight people, including six Asian women, at spas around Atlanta. The incident raised fears that it might be a new wave of attacks on Asian Americans. A report released by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence said racially motivated extremists pose the most lethal domestic terrorism threats to the U.S. It also warned that threats from domestic violent extremism are metastasizing across the country and could grow in 2021. Hate crimes against minorities in the U.S. have significantly increased over the past years, as former President Donald Trump explicitly favored white people over people of color. Many African Americans and Hispanics have been attacked or killed by white police officers or extremist groups. Asian Americans are in no better condition. They have been grappling with a rise in hate crimes since the coronavirus outbreak, as Trump directly blamed China for the pandemic. Now the question is, how would a country whose foundation has been built on killing the minorities manage to get rid of racism, which has been entrenched in its culture for centuries?
This is This Hour's On the News Line. President Biden's China policy is not off to a good start, as American and Chinese diplomats have engaged in bitter exchanges during their first in-person meeting. The Alaska talks showed the frosty ties between the two rivals are not going to thaw anytime soon.
The United States and China have held their first high-level in-person talk since President Joe Biden entered the Oval Office in Alaska on Thursday. The growing rift between the two nations was made evident before the media as diplomats traded barbs during the opening session, a formal function in diplomatic talks that's supposed to take minutes, which in this case lasted for an hour. U.S. State Secretary Antony Blinken said the issue of Hong Kong, Taiwan, cyber attacks on United States, blame on China, and what he called Beijing's economic coercion toward Washington's allies would be discussed during the two-day talks. In response, China's top diplomat Yang Jiechi slammed the U.S. for interfering in Beijing's internal affairs. The official also lashed out at Washington for what he called its struggling democracy and poor treatment of minorities. He also sharply criticized the U.S. foreign and trade policy. Blinken accused China of grandstanding during the public meeting, while his Chinese counterpart Wang Yi slammed the U.S., quote, inhospitality.
I think that the Chinese representatives were not expecting a friendly meeting, but I think we're surprised by the how intensely aggressive and hostile the statements were coming from the U.S. side. The Biden administration's attitude toward China and orientation toward China is even more hostile and belligerent and aggressive than was Trump. Every day there's something new.
Experts also believe the first major meeting between the two superpowers suggests that a reset of ties is not in the cards for the foreseeable future.
The talks were characterized by the U.S. being on the offensive and China towing the diplomatic line. However, China made sure that it relayed the message to the U.S. side that it would defend its sovereignty. Here are some of the allegations. The U.S. accuses China of threatening the world order, while China accuses the U.S. of interfering in its internal affairs, like the Hong Kong issue.
During the bitter talks, the United States accused China of human rights violations. The Chinese foreign minister was quick to respond. He noted that the U.S. no longer has the qualification to speak to China from a position of strength, adding that many Americans have little confidence in the U.S. democracy.
In the United States, police kill over 1,100 people on the average year, and that's over the last 6 years. That's three a day. There's no other advanced capitalist country, developed capitalist country, that comes even close. Canada's the next one. And the U.S. rate is four times Canada's, but it's 27 times the rate in Germany and 67 times the rate of police killing in England and Wales. So those are very serious violations of human rights. There's great poverty in large sections of the U.S. and no prospects for getting better. That's a violation of human rights. So this very condescending attitude that the U.S. representatives are taking, and their idea that they can lecture others about human rights in the world, is I think much refuted by people all over the world, their governments and people all over the world today.
As part of his go-it-alone policy, former U.S. President Donald Trump provoked an all-out trade war with China, imposing several rounds of tariffs against billions of dollars worth of Chinese imports, a move that Beijing retaliated. The Trump administration also sanctioned several Chinese officials and major companies over a variety of different allegations, ranging from human rights violations to threatening the U.S. national security. During the 2020 U.S. presidential campaign, Trump's fellow Republicans feared that Joe Biden would adopt a soft stance in China. However, top Republicans have in recent weeks voiced approval of Biden's attempts to reset relations with Washington's allies and uniting them against China. Although the Biden administration is yet to clearly define its China policy, the opening of the first major meeting between the two sides served as a preview of what lies ahead for the two nations for at least the next 4 years.
Chile registers over 7,000 new COVID-19 cases, breaking its single-day record for infections of the coronavirus. The fast-rising caseload has filled critical care wards, leaving Chile with nearly 200 beds available for new patients. Following the surge in cases all over the capital, Santiago is in strict lockdown this weekend. So far, the virus has claimed more than 22,000 lives out of over 925,000 cases in Chile. Meanwhile, Brazil reported some 2,400 new COVID-19 deaths, raising the total to nearly 293,000. The Brazilian Health Ministry also registered over 79,000 additional confirmed cases of the virus, bringing the overall tally to nearly 12 million. That's your world news for now. Stay tuned.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم يا مقلب القلوب والأبصار.
O rotator of hearts and eyes.
يا مدبر الليل والنهار.
O regulator of the day and night.
يا محول الحول والأحوال.
O transformer of the state and conditions.
حول حالنا إلى أحسن الحال.
Turn our state into the best of states. Happy New Iranian Calendar Year. Happy Nowruz. In the limelight.
Studies show climate change is supercharging some weather and climate events and will lead to more severe and longer lasting heat waves, stronger hurricanes, an increased wildfire risk, and a longer wildfire season, says Tara Lohan, writer, in an article published under the heading, Climate-Driven Extreme Weather is Imperiling Wildlife Conservation Efforts. Here's more. Hailstorm in South Texas, tornadoes in Tennessee, wildfires across the West, a barrage of hurricanes. Those are among the record 22 weather and climate disasters that each topped $1 billion in damages last year in the United States. In all, the price tag for 2020 hit a whopping $95 billion, and that's just in the United States. Reinsurance firm Swiss Reput global economic losses at $175 billion last year, including $32 billion for floods in China and $13 billion in damages from Cyclone Amphan across India and Bangladesh. Studies show that climate change is supercharging some weather and climate events and will lead to more severe and longer-lasting heat waves, stronger hurricanes, an increased wildfire risk, and a longer wildlife season. We can also expect more heavy rain events and severe droughts, not to mention other extreme events like February's polar vortex. You can't attribute any particular storm to climate change, but what we can do know is that climate change tips the odds of making many of these events more severe, says Bruce Stein, chief scientist and associate vice president at the National Wildlife Federation. While experts tabulate the economic losses, including homes destroyed, crops ruined, businesses shuttered, ecosystems and wildlife can also sustain damage that's harder to quantify. Many plants and wildlife evolve with and have adapted to dealing with large-scale disturbances, but we are beginning to see mega disturbances at levels beyond what we saw in the past, says Stein, and that can take a toll. Extreme weather can kill animals directly or indirectly, like by destroying food sources, contaminating water, or altering habitat, forcing a species to move into areas where there may be more competition, fewer resources, or a greater risk of predation. What we begin to find when you get some of these mega disturbances is that it's beyond the ability of a species or their adaptive capacity to bounce back, says Stein. The effects of climate change on the natural world are being felt at two speeds. One is more gradual, referred to by scientists as ramping, shrinking glaciers, rising sea levels. The second is quick, like extreme weather events. Both are problematic, says Sean Maxwell, a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Queensland Centre for Biodiversity and Conservation Science. But he adds, I think the changes to acute events have the greatest potential to devastate local populations or ecosystems, and the impacts of these events are often more difficult to plan or to avoid. Maxwell was the lead author of a 2018 study published in the journal Diversity and Distributions that examined how changes in the frequency and intensity of extreme weather and climate events affected wildlife. The researchers looked at 519 studies of ecological responses to extreme events, including cyclones, droughts, floods, and heat and cold waves that took place from 1941 to 2015. They found that the response was negative 57% of the time. Some of the negative responses we found were quite concerning, including more than 100 cases of dramatic population declines and 31 cases of local population extinction following an extreme event, says Maxwell. Populations of critically endangered bird species in Hawaii, such as the palea, have been annihilated due to drought, and populations of lizard species have been wiped out due to cyclones in Bahamas. Plant species, the researchers found, had the highest number of negative responses to extreme events, followed by reptiles and amphibians. Collectively, the studies in our review suggest that extreme weather and climate events have profound implications for species and ecosystem management, the researchers concluded. Species that are already threatened or endangered are, of course, especially at risk. Take the Atwater prairie chicken. A million of these birds once ranged across the prairie of Texas and Louisiana. Today, fewer than 100 remain in the wild, and scientists have sought to bolster their populations with captive breeding programs. But when Hurricane Harvey walloped Texas with 130-mile-per-hour winds and record rainfall in 2017, the birds were right in harm's way. The Atwater Prairie Chicken National Wildlife Refuge tracked 29 individual birds, mostly hens. Post-hurricane staff confirmed only 5 of them still alive, Texas Climate News reported. It added, the hurricane also killed roughly 80% of a prairie chicken population on private property in Goliad County. Other species with limited ranges, like those on islands, also face big threats. If a species is well distributed, then if one part of its range gets hit, there is the ability for it to recover, says Stein. But if essentially all its eggs are on one basket, and that particular place gets hit by one of these big disturbances, that's when you have a real concern. In 2017, Hurricane Maria cut the population of just 200 Puerto Rican parrots in half. The year before, Hurricane Matthew was believed to have wiped out Las Bahama nuthatches, that is Sitta insurils. It took 2 years before a few of the birds were found, and then Hurricane Dorian struck in 2019, making their survival unlikely, according to Diana Bell, a professor of conservation biology at the University of East Anglia. In fact, Dorian may have not only sealed the fate of the nuthatch, but also severely impacted other birds endemic to these islands, particularly the Bahama warbler and abaco parrot, Bell wrote in an essay for the conservation. Also known as the Bahama Amazon parrot, this subspecies uniquely nests in limestone cavities underground, which are likely to have been flooded by the storm surge. The risk to wildlife from extreme storms can be compounded by the ramping effects of climate change, too. If you have increasingly severe hurricanes where you'd also got sea level rise essentially providing a higher latch point for the storm surge, then you start seeing impacts beyond the historical record, says Stein. In other places, extreme weather is an extra blow to species already struggling with other environmental pressures like habitat loss, invasive species, or pollution. Last year, the world washed in horror as land use management, climate change, and drought helped push Australia's bushfires to a terrifying new level, killing 34 people and burning 37,500 square miles. In the immediate aftermath, one expert put the death toll for wildlife at 1 billion animals lost. Since then, the figure has been revised to 3 billion killed or displaced by the blazes. A study published in Nature Ecology and Evolution found that the fire impacted the critical habitat of 832 native species, with 70 species losing more than 30% of their natural range. 21 of those were already at risk of extinction. Those that survive could find themselves hard-pressed in future climate disasters. Multiple extreme events are likely to act in synergistic ways to exacerbate risk of species extinction, wrote Maxwell and the other researchers of 2018 study. Australia already has one of the highest extinction rates, and the wildfires could limit the capacity of some species to recover, like the endangered kangaroo island, Donart, and the long-footed Puturo, and threaten others. Australia's record blazes last year could push the number of endangered species in the country up by 19%, the study in Nature Ecology and Evolution found. When Hurricane Irma sacked the Florida Keys in 2017, the storm tossed boats ashore, destroyed more than 1,000 homes, and left a trail of debris across the islands. It also endangered one of the region's beloved endemic species, the tiny key deer, which today primarily live on Big Pine Key. Some deer were killed in the storm, and surviving animals faced threats to their already limited freshwater supply as the storm surge dumped saline ocean water into freshwater pools. Island residents responded the way folks often do after a disaster. They offered help to their neighbors. What you saw during and shortly after Irma is that these key deer were coming up to houses looking for freshwater, says Stein, and people were putting out kiddie pools of water for them. But beyond immediate food and water relief, there is a much bigger task ahead. Reducing greenhouse gas emissions to address the ongoing dangers of climate change and the ability of ecosystems to adapt. Key deer, for example, also face a long-term threat to their drinking water supply from rising seas. Sometimes no number of kiddie pools can repair. And more severe hurricanes are likely in their future, too. As climate change continues to ensure extreme climate and weather events are more and more common, we now need to act to ensure species have the best chance to survive, says Maxwell. Wherever possible, high quality and intact habitat areas should be retained, as these are the places where species are most resilient to increasing exposure to extreme events. If such intact habitat doesn't exist, ecological restoration efforts can be used to help species adapt, his study found.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and since today is the last day of the Iranian calendar year 1399 Solar Hijri, which means that at 13 hours, 7 minutes and 28 seconds Iran Standard Time, planet Earth will complete its yearly revolution around the sun. Let us contemplate on a supplication to the one and only God that the whole nation and millions of other people all over the world recited at the exact hour and continue to recite today and the start of the new year in Iran. O rotator of hearts and eyes, O regulator of the day and night, O transformer of state and situations, turn our state into the best of conditions.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود باعث تو لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, we send our peace and blessings upon all the prophets of Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala, and especially the last of them, Muhammad al-Mustafa and his progeny, and those companions who followed their path. I'm your host, Sayyid Wahid Alawi, and welcome to another program of For a Better Life, here on IRIB English Radio. There is a definite interrelation between experience of suffering and attainment of felicity, what we call in the Arabic language sa'ada. There is a cause and effect relation between hardships and adversities on the one hand, and felicity and achievement on the other. The famous philosopher Hegel says, life is not made for happiness, but for achievement. The history of the world is not the theater of happiness. Periods of happiness are blank pages in it, for they are periods of harmony, and this dull content is unworthy of a man. History is made only in those periods in which the contradictions of reality are being resolved by growth, as the hesitation and awkwardness of youth pass into the ease and order of maturity. These were the words of the great German philosopher Hegel. Metals, in order to be separated, dear brothers and sisters, from impurities, are melted in hot furnaces. Hardships of life have a similar result for the human being. They purify him or her and purge him of impurities. So whenever you face hardship, it's like going through fire. You get purified. They purge you from impurities and prepare you for fulfilling our human duties. Ultimately, no individual can attain to felicity and survival except in the shadow of suffering. The noble Quran says, indeed, we have created man in the cradle of trouble and suffering. Chapter 90, verse 4. Imam Al-Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam says, indeed, of all people, the severest of sufferings and afflictions are faced by the prophets, and after them by others, in proportion to their degree of merit. ثم أمثل وأمثل. In order to drive home the same point, the great mystic scholar Jalaluddin Muhammad Balkhi al-Rumi says, "Cast the wheat grain under the soil, then ears of corn were gathered from its dust. Then it was ground between the millstones, and lo, its worth rose and it became life-giving bread. Then the bread was crushed under the teeth, and lo, it became intellect, soul, and spirit, and gainful understanding and comprehension." Intellect. Thus says the great mystic scholar Jalaluddin Muhammad Rumi.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
A European thinker says, "Hardships and difficulties make up the touchstone of morality. In the same way as some plants must be squeezed to give out their perfume, so also some natures have to be subjected to hardship in order that their essential talents and merits become manifest. There is no ease, dear brothers and sisters, and comfort in the world that does not change into pain and adversity. Thus, we should not flee from adversity or pain or suffering all the time." That is a concept which we have today in the ideology of modernism, especially the ideology which is predominant in the Western Hemisphere, in the Western world, where we say that we should flee. That's what they taught us, right? That we should flee from suffering. That is joy. That is a definition of happiness, to not feel suffering or pain. But the philosophy that we have here is that if that is possible, that is great. But it is an impossibility. Hardship will sooner or later come towards you, and you have to deal with it. How do you deal with it? Not by fleeing from that suffering, not from escaping from that problem, but dealing with it, confronting it. There is no hardship that does not ultimately lead to happiness and felicity, dear brothers and sisters. That is the philosophy of Islam. In each of these conditions, the results that we derive depend on our use or misuse of it. Complete happiness and ease are not to be found in this world. Even if they might tell us that you should try to reach complete happiness or be in the pursuit of complete happiness and ease in this world, even if supposedly they were to exist, let us suppose that they would exist, they would not be fruitful, dear brothers and sisters. Nor would they offer any kind of good or benefit. Among the teachings that have been delivered to man to this day, the most worthless and hollow is the one that invites him to comfort and ease. For under all circumstances, defeat and hardship are wiser teachers than happiness and comfort. Till next time, dear brothers and sisters, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of you.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
Your love is all I need.
All I need.
Your love is all I need.
It's all I need.
Your love is all I need.
All I need.
Your love is all I need.
Oh, 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 oh.
Cause your love is all I need. To be all I need. And I know that you see how much you need. You mean to me, 'cause your love is all I need, to be all I can be, and I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
Hello and welcome back to The Light. Taking care of one's dental health is an absolute must, no matter humans or animals. A 14-year-old Siberian tiger has undergone a dental operation in a French zoo. The dentist took good care of the animal and even administered eye drops so that his eyes would not go dry during the procedure. Baikal broke his fangs 7 years ago while playing around, prompting the zoo owners to have her tooth revitalized and filled. The operation was successful, and the playful cat is now enjoying a brand new fang.
March 22nd is a very important day, but many of us may not be aware of that. The 60-meter picture shows an Ethiopian girl carrying water that was created ahead of the World Water Day, the international occasion falling on March 22nd. A group of artists made the landmark in northern England to raise awareness about climate change and the global water crisis.
Interspersed in the drawing is like a cracked turf to symbolise the drought that climate change will cause. And then the metaphor, if you like, is that the sea is coming in, the rising tide is the rising sea levels that we're going to face in the future.
The artwork was made in collaboration with WaterAid, that's an international NGO focusing on water, sanitation and hygiene. The project supervisors say the main goal is to raise awareness about the importance of water in children's lives. They say they also want to raise attention that how climate change is affecting people's access to water.
It must be exciting to be to experience a real-world version of a game. Let's go to Japan to see what it's like to be Mario. Fans of the classic Super Mario games are delighted as Nintendo's first-ever theme park has opened in the western city of Osaka. Visitors can gather virtual coins and defeat villains while exploring the park with a smart wristband. One of the park's main draws is a Mario Kart ride around the castle of Mario's enemy, Bowser.
We perfectly recreated the world of the game. You can feel what it's like to be inside of the game and enjoy the life-sized world. You'll find piranha plants, and you'll see what it is like to be Mario.
Visitors can also meet life-size characters from the Mushroom Kingdom and grab a bite in Mario-themed restaurants. The attraction is part of the Universal Studios Japan Amusement Park. Its opening was delayed repeatedly from last summer due to the coronavirus pandemic. A Crimean powerlifter has set a Russian record for pulling a giant airplane. The powerlifter managed to pull an amphibian aircraft weighing 31.5 tons. He did so over the distance of more than a meter at a military base near the city of Sevastopol. The strongman suffered serious injuries during the first attempt on Tuesday when he pulled the plane for 31 centimeters. With the fourth attempt later in the day, he pulled it to 1 meter and 12 centimeters in just 40 seconds. The record was confirmed by representatives of the Record Book of Russia.
An archaeological team has discovered new ruins in Egypt. The discovery reveals a monastic life in the country's western deserts in the 5th century. The Egyptian Antiquities Ministry says the discoveries include ruins of 3 churches with graffiti and symbols on walls. It says the religious inscriptions and the Greek biblical passages prove the nature of life at that time. The mission was carried out by a group of French-Norwegian archaeologists. The find offers better understanding of the development of buildings and the formation of the first monastic communities. In recent months, Egypt has announced several major archaeological discoveries, hoping to revitalize its tourism industry. School children from Spain and Portugal have been learning how to combine sports with science. They have now put their knowledge and skills to the test by racing their electric cars. The contest was held between 9 teams outside Athletic Bilbao's San Mamés Stadium. However, the goal wasn't to see who could drive the fastest. Rather, the strategy was to use their battery power as efficiently as possible. The team that completed as many laps as possible in 90 minutes was declared the winner. Driving the car too fast could quickly drain the batteries.
Apart from being fun and interesting, you can learn mechanics, electrics, and then you can compete. You learn things from the realm of engineering, more things for the future. I usually say that the electric car is the future, but others will make hybrids in order to maintain speed and design and the engine type.
The cars are powered by twin lead-acid batteries that supply 24 volts to a 240-watt electric motor. The teams don't have to build their cars from scratch because a basic kit is supplied to them. However, they have to modify the vehicle mechanically, electrically, and aerodynamically. The project started in the UK in the 1990s. It seeks to raise awareness in young people about alternative energy sources, climate change, and pollution issues. Let's go to the US, where a baby giraffe has explored his habitat at the Indianapolis Zoo for the first time. In a sunny day, Candy playfully made his first public appearance along with his mother and the herd. The cute calf was born in November and has no siblings yet. Giraffes are native to sub-Saharan Africa, so the zookeepers only allow them to be outside when the weather is not wet or cold. Two tiny islands in South Korea have become tourist attractions by turning almost everything to purple. They are now known as Purple Islands. Banwol and Bakji Islands used to be abandoned locations with small populations of elderly people. But everything changed when residents launched a popular campaign there in 2015. Inspired by their native balloon flower, they started painting the houses, roads and bridges in different shades of purple. They planted more purple flowers on the islands and wore clothes with the same color. Restaurants on the islands also started serving purple food.
We couldn't travel overseas due to COVID-19, so we thought about a local trip instead and found these purple islands. It's amazing and looks like fairy tales and magic. As I'm seeing, the grandmas are all wearing purple clothes. It is very dreamy.
The tourists also praise the welcoming spirit of the islands, who offer a free entry to the visitors dressed in purple. The campaign has changed the island's ambience, adding liveliness and activity to the routine of its residents. It's also attracted the government support, which has invested more than $4 million to turn the islands purple. World-renowned musician Yo-Yo Ma has transferred a COVID-19 vaccine waiting room to a concert hall in the U.S. city of Pittsburgh. played the pieces after receiving a second dose of the coronavirus jab. Dozens of socially distanced people who had just received their second shot listened on at the Berkshire Community College while waiting for the 15-minute mandatory observation period to end. Yo-Yo Ma, who is a local resident, has said his performance was meant to give something back to the community.
Rations in the town of Yaryupolsky mark the end of winter with a colorful Maslenitsa celebration. People dressed in costumes march in the center of the town, which lies some 170 kilometers from Moscow. After some friendly competitions, participants burn the effigy of Maslenitsa. This marks the end of winter and was believed to fertilize the soil and bring a good harvest in the upcoming autumn.
The Maslenitsa went great. We have been sitting at home for a long time because of this COVID, but now everything is fine.
Maslenitsa is celebrated during the last week before the Christian festival of Lent. It is a last chance to the upcoming weeks to eat dairies and meat, which are forbidden in the upcoming fasting time. The festival began as a pagan ritual, but was later absorbed into the Russian Orthodox Christian tradition.
Now, plastic waste has become a global environmental challenge, causing frustration amongst residents as recycling isn't common everywhere. But a Filipino artist has grabbed the opportunity to turn trash into treasure. Since 2019, Gilbert has been transforming plastic waste, especially non-recyclable trash, into beautiful paintings. He has so far made over 24 artworks by scattering shredded plastic bits across his canvases. The artist also uses expired paint and leftover wood from demolished homes. Gilbert gets some of those materials from around his neighborhoods, while the rest is given to him by donators. He says he got the idea to put that waste to good use when he found out his country is one of the world's top plastic waste producers.
We are the third contributor of plastic waste into the ocean, the third in the world. When I found out about that, I had to think of ways to raise awareness and knowledge on the reasons why we contribute this much waste.
The artist's works have been displayed in famous galleries in the Philippines. They have sold for prices ranging from a few hundred to a few thousand dollars. Gilbert has also created an advocacy group called Green Arts, aimed at encouraging artists to use recycled waste for their work.
Now, the first gorilla born in the Berlin Zoo in 16 years finally has a name. The naming day was celebrated with no visitors due to the coronavirus pandemic. However, zookeepers made the day special for the tiny turtle and her first-time mother with their favorite treats. The baby was born in mid-February. After a few weeks, the zoo received over 17,000 name suggestions for her.
That's a wrap-up. Thank you so much for being with us, and bye-bye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.